Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Friday. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, Joel Klatt, the feisty Joel Klatt, college football players now getting back. We're going to have a college football season all fired up for it. And a feisty Joel Klatt will be joining us. Joy Taylor's off today, back Monday. She's in Miami hanging out with family. John Goulet, the veteran newsman, will be picking up the slack. John, love you. So all of us, I mean, you'd have to be pretty arrogant, right, to not acknowledge if you've been marginally successful in life, some of it is probably due to your parents. Genetics, were they around? Did you have a strong upbringing? I was very lucky. I didn't have a perfect childhood, but my dad was a doctor. His brother was a doctor. My mom, before she came over from England, was an honors student. I had pretty bright parents. I think it matters. They were pretty smart. My mom gave me kind of a worldview. I grew up listening to some, you know, the BBC, and there was we had a lot of books around the house. I'm very lucky. I think that's better than average. Right. So you got to be pretty arrogant not to at least acknowledge, you know, where did you come from? I always say this. I'm always really impressed. I always ask people, where are you from? Are your parents still around? I'm always kind of blown away when I hear somebody that's had a little bit of a rough upbringing and they've just made themselves into something and their family into something. It matters. And into sports, it also matters where you land in the NFL, your first NFL family. And I've said this. This is why I question Joe Burrow. I think he's going to have a much harder time succeeding in Cincinnati than perhaps, you know, Josh Allen had in Buffalo, where he inherited a great young coach and an excellent young GM. But here's a story that breaks today that Jamal Adams, the best player for the New York Jets, wants out. He's demanding a trade. The Jets are like, we're not going to trade you. He's their best player. Where you land is so important. Now, think about Sam Darnold. So Sam Darnold gets there in the 2018 draft. No other player for the Jets in that draft has really hit. He's it. The following year in the draft, one of the worst drafts I've ever seen by any team, one guy appears to be able to play, Quinnen Williams. Star, doubtful. Player, decent. Take Josh Allen. In the year he got drafted, the same as Sam Darnold, 2018, in that draft alone, the Buffalo Bills drafted a linebacker in the first round, Trumaine Edmonds. He's already a Pro Bowler. By the way, last year's draft for Buffalo, they got a starter on the defensive end in the first round. They got a starter at right tackle in the second round, a starter at running back in the third round, and a starter at tight end in the fourth round. Just look at wide receiver. Sam Darnold's best wide receiver. He's gone now, Robbie Anderson. Carolina got him for almost nothing. Josh Allen for Buffalo at wide receiver. They've added Cole Beasley in the slot, Stephon Diggs, a superstar, and a free agent John Brown who gives you 1,000 yards. That's just at wide receiver. That's just at the primary spot you need. Buffalo already has rebuilt their offensive line. The Jets are trying to, fingers crossed. Josh Allen inherits a really, really Sean McDermott good head coach. And McDermott's got a buddy who's the GM. They've shown to be incredibly capable drafting in free agency. The coach and GM for the Jets right now, cross your fingers. The first two were already canned. Where you land matters. It's about 75 to 80% of it. That's why when Sam Darnold at the end of last year, after mono, went 6-2 down the stretch with a bad O-line, 13 TDs, 4 picks, 93.5 passer rating, ran for 2 touchdowns. I said, this is crazy impressive. And this is why I wonder how Joe Burrow flourishes in Cincinnati. We just don't consider this. In life, we acknowledge, oh yeah, good parents, good kid. In the NFL, it's like, well, he's got a lot of talent. Josh Allen is a complete project. The two times Josh Allen at Wyoming in college played decent teams, Iowa and Oregon, he was dreadful. He was terrible. Then you put him in the NFL and he's actually more consistent. He's got better mechanics. He's more dependable in the NFL in college. So consider that when I criticize Joe Burrow. It's not really about him as much as it is the people he'll have to pull, the Bengal organization. Jamal Adams, great player. You can make an argument to keep him or move him. The name of the game in this sport is drafting well, finding stars, and then re-signing him. Probably what I'd do. So I saw something that I thought was very interesting. So Fox Bet came out with something yesterday. It's called spread value of coaches. How many points is your coach worth? Now, we all know, you know, Bill Belichick's worth some points, right? No, nobody would deny that. And, you know, we know Joe Judge of the New York Giants right now probably isn't worth any points. Not yet. So they came out Fox Bet. And the names at the top are not surprising. Bill Belichick is worth a field goal. Sean Payton, Kyle Shanahan, John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid, Sean McVay, Doug Peterson, Pete Carroll, Sean McDermott. What? Number eight is Mike McCarthy? Mike McCarthy is worth mostly the same as Sean McVay? What? He's worth more than Pete Carroll and Doug Peterson? He's almost same as Andy Reid. Well, how's that possible? I'm just going to ask you a couple questions. Did you know that Mike McCarthy's winning percentage plus a Super Bowl is higher than Pete Carroll's, John Harbaugh's, and Andy Reid? 62%. Did you know that? Did you know that Mike McCarthy has more playoff wins than Vince Lombardi, Tony Dungy, Mike Tomlin, Sean Payton, Jimmy Johnson, and Mike Shanahan? Yeah, the guy that looks like a Chicago cop. Did you know that? How is it possible Fox Bet says he's a better coach than Pete Carroll, right up there with Andy Reid? Why? Because we were forced to take a side. In Green Bay, we had to pick a side, right? The media was so, and this is so American media in 2020, political or sports, was so giddy with Aaron Rodgers. At one point, they were calling him the GOAT. I'm not making it up. We were calling him the GOAT. I mean, Marino, Elway, Peyton, Favre, Staubach, Tom Brady, the GOAT. But the media, foaming, made us pick a side. How come Aaron's not winning more? How come he's not winning more Super Bowls? So the media said, Aaron is great and Mike McCarthy's a Milwaukee cop. But here's the funny thing, is that McCarthy left and Aaron Rodgers' numbers went down. His completion percentage down slightly, his passer rating down slightly. 400 yards a game or 400 yards total for the season went down. That's with Devontae Adams. That was with an improved defense. It's not like the Bears were good last year. It's not like Detroit wasn't a complete grease fire last year. The division was worse than the year before. How's that possible? The Bears weren't as good as the previous year. The Lions were terrible because Matt Stafford was out. Minnesota was about the same. Not quite as good, but pretty good. Dalvin Cook got hurt. And the numbers went down. Is it possible that we always gave Aaron way too much credit and Mike McCarthy not enough credit? I mean, it should be noted that Russell Wilson has more fourth quarter comebacks than Aaron Rodgers, despite almost 50 fewer NFL starts. Well, we'll find the answer out this year. Okay, so right now, if you think Aaron's the reason they won and Mike is just nothing, we're going to find out. And we're going to know probably by December 10th, December 15th. Because Mike McCarthy now takes over the Dallas Cowboys and Dak Prescott, who none of you think is great. You think he's good. You think he's his franchise guy. You think he's solid. You think he's a good leader. You think he's reliable, but you don't think he's Favre. You don't think he's Brady. You don't think he's Breeze. You don't think... If Mike McCarthy wins in Dallas and Dak Prescott flourishes, can we all then be authentic and honest and acknowledge, due to the fact we were forced to pick sides, we always gave Aaron way too much credit and we never gave Mike McCarthy enough? I mean, he's not flashy. He doesn't have the square jaw. He's not John Harbaugh. He's not incredible at the mic like Mike Tomlin. He doesn't look as good for his age as Pete Carroll. He doesn't have that Sean McVay cool factor, the Kyle Shanahan cool factor. Maybe he just can coach. Maybe because Aaron is so cool and Mike's not cool at all, that persuaded us to have one as the GOAT and one as a bum. But we will know by December 1st if we were over our skis on that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Oklahoma State has a football coach named Mike Gundy. A lot of people through the years remember him from a rant he had. I'm 40, I'm a man. You know, the haircut, a lot of swagger, very good offensive coach. He used to play there. So back in 1989, he was the quarterback of Oklahoma State. And a game against Colorado, there were multiple players for Colorado that said he used a racial slur, the N-word, during a game. He denied it. Alfred Williams, there's a story that came out yesterday about that incident. And Alfred Williams said, I'm not asking for Mike Gundy to be fired. Alfred Williams, by the way, was one of the best players maybe ever in the history of Colorado football. Great player. Butkus Award winner, multiple Pro Bowls, just great football player. He and multiple players said Gundy said it during the game. And now Gundy, you know, is in hot water, the OAN shirt. And Gundy had dumb comments about COVID-19 and hasn't been very good during the Black Lives Matter movement. And so then this story came out and Alfred Williams said, listen, I'm not asking to fire the guy, but I want an apology. I want to see growth, which is what I have said from the very beginning. If we're asking for growth, don't ask for perfection. The least Mike Gundy can do is offer an apology and show growth. But what's interesting here is about Mike Gundy is it's not a surprise. And I've followed college football since I was a kid. And there's about 12 really great jobs in college football. And when the jobs are open, it's a national search. Penn State, Michigan, Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, USC. Those are national jobs. Every other college football coach, after that, schools are just looking for somebody who's got a connection to the school, who a couple boosters know. That's Mike Gundy. Since high school, he's only spent 5 years of his life not connected to Oklahoma State and Stillwater. He's a big deal there. He was a big recruit in high school, an hour out of town, Midwest City. He was a big deal in college there. And he left for a couple years. He came back. He's a big deal there. He's a local football coach. And he's great on Saturday, and he's probably great at that Wednesday luncheon with all the boosters. But he's been really bad this year in the offseason. Why? Because Black Lives Matter is a global movement. And COVID-19 is a global pandemic. And Mike is local. He's good at a booster luncheon. Don't ask for anything else. This is not Mike Krzyzewski, who's a national coach, NBA offers, legend in college, coached the Olympic team. Remember how smart he was when asked about COVID-19? Oklahoma and Texas are national jobs. How smart have Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley been on not only COVID-19, but Black Lives Matter? Unfortunately, and this is not picking on Mike Gundy, he is not a victim here. This is what you get a lot in college sports. I'm just trying to be instructive. There's a handful, 5 or 6, 7 national college basketball jobs, maybe 10. There's maybe 10 to 12 national college football jobs, where it's not about who a booster knows or a guy that's from here or a guy that used to coach here. You go big. And the big candidates like the Tom Hermans and like the Lincoln Rileys and like the Mike Krzyzewskis and like the Bill Selfs, it's not a shock. They have flourished as we deal with COVID-19 and we have a real revolution going on globally, long overdue, Black Lives Matter. Mike Gundy has handled it precisely how I would expect him to handle it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
He's my buddy. We used to work together. Now he's doing stuff at The Ringer on his podcast, the Ryan Russillo podcast. Joining us now via the Cower Global Satellite Network, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. And now we live in the same little small hometown. How great is that? Look at my guy, Ryan Russillo. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning to you. Let's. I want to start with the NBA because I think your brand, a lot of people know you. You've talked to GMs. You know it. You deep dive on it constantly, and you have excellent information. So I did think it's interesting. I think Kyrie Irving gets the right to an opinion. But this whole we're going to start a league thing, and I thought, wait, the minimum you make in this league 2 years in is like, or 3 years in is like 2.8. I'm like, the player's not taken care of. What did you take of what became kind of a spectacle, a polarizing spectacle of Kyrie being the voice of the league during this lockout?
Well, or during the pandemic? No, I think he did.
Yeah.
Right. I think there are two things that he deserves a lot of credit for. He brought a voice to the voiceless. Other players who felt like this league's been run by stars, we just have to go along according to them. I have concerns. And I think Kyrie did that. And I actually think that that's a really cool thing that he did. Any player that's worried about health, worried about family, worried about the distance, this whole operation, if you don't want to go down there and play, and then you think there's more important things in basketball, which we can totally understand, especially right now, then that's cool too. I wouldn't criticize anybody for bringing up any of that stuff. But we are all products of our own resume, right? So Kyrie has had moments in the past where he's left a lot of us going like, what's he doing? So when this came out, and I first heard it from somebody saying Kyrie is a different guy, sees the world differently. I think Dinwiddie is somebody who we've even seen one of his teammates who was like, maybe I'll do a GoFundMe to try to figure out a way to play for another team. And everybody's like, well, there's no way that's legal. So even though I like the concept and the conversation of could players actually come together and do this on their own, we know that in life there are two kinds of people, all right? One guy who most of us are is we like to see that number every 2 weeks in our checking account, okay? We like to see that direct deposit, that paycheck every 2 weeks. And then there are other people that go, what can I be worth in 5 or 10 years? And the idea that you would get the top players in the NBA to all line up their contracts, to all expire at the exact same time, knowing that really what they're doing is sacrificing their current day earning power to set up generations after. It's an amazing idea. It's very selfless. It's also incredibly unrealistic.
You know, it's interesting. To go from an isolation situation with a pandemic to an isolation situation in Orlando, it is a big ask, especially when you watch baseball guys and you're going to watch football players and they're with their families. I think it's a tough ask, but be that as it may, I think the stars want to play. There's been a lot of discussion on, you know, this is a lot of time off. My gut feeling's always been, what an advantage for like Anthony Davis, who can be brittle. What an advantage for Kawhi, who has injuries, or Harden, who burns out. I think we're going to see a veteran-dominated bubble in Orlando. No upsets, short, quick series with veterans dominating. Is that what you see?
I'm way more on that side. And I feel like because this is so different, people have tried to come up with like different outcomes. And I'm all for that. You know, it gets boring to just go ahead and say, I'm going to pick Cleveland and Golden State every single year, which actually would have been a good call because it happened most of the time, right? But I think because of this layoff, I've heard from more voices that I trust saying, you know, could Boston, because they're younger, find a way out of the East? Why are we going to start picking teams that were kind of middling teams? And I'm not saying they're bad, but 4 and 5 seeds. Like, why am I all of a sudden supposed to believe because there was time off that those teams now have an advantage and the teams that were dominant are at a disadvantage? It doesn't really make any sense. Like, why is everybody off of Milwaukee now when they were trouncing the competition and had like they had a great home record? OK, they also beat everybody on the road, too. They were historic in their point differential. So even though, you know, you could talk about Milwaukee's roster being older, look at who's actually playing the top 5 minutes. Giannis is 26, Middleton's 28. So, yeah, LeBron's a little bit older, but I would agree with you. I would think, like, didn't everybody love people being shut down and taking games off and taking time off? So I'm not gonna be in this hurry to start picking all these unprecedented outcomes just because I think the middling teams somehow have an advantage. It doesn't really make any sense to me.
I want to go to football stuff. So when Khalil Mack got traded, I was like everybody else. I was like, wow, you drafted him. He became the best pass rusher. I'd pay for him. And then all of a sudden, a year later, you're like, wow, the Raiders actually got a bunch of good players for him. And we tend to do this, that outside of a Patrick Mahomes or a Russell Wilson, they're not most guys in the NFL you can trade. So that brings me to Jamal Adams. He is easily the Jets' best player. He is maybe the best blitzing safety I've seen in years. He's a total playmaker from special teams to defense. Greg Williams loves him. But, boy, you could get a lot for him, and it's a lot to pay a safety. Where do you fall? They're not paying Sam Darnold anything. Where do you fall on right. The superstar player, Khalil Mack, Jamal Adams, on a team with a million needs. You're the GM of the Jets. He wants to be traded. What would you do, Ryan?
I would trade him. I would trade him because I wouldn't want to have to start every day with a Jamal Adams update for the next 5 years, because that's what the story has been. He is a fantastic player. He's so much fun to watch. He's just different in the way he plays safety. He's so physical. Just seeing him roam and anticipate snap counts. He's all of those things. I'm not knocking that. But this has been going on forever. Like, and this is somebody in Jamal Adams who says, oh, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And then he can't stop talking about it. And the whole thing spawned from him kind of wanting out. So I think he and his agent are playing this a little bit more than just all of a sudden Douglas decided, hey, you know what I'm going to do? Just trade Jamal Adams. I'm bored today. That's not what happened. And that's how this whole thing's been turned into this story. Like, they just decided they wanted to get this guy. He hasn't been happy the whole time, Colin. So I don't think I'd want to deal with this. Like, at some point, as great as the player is, if you don't want to be here and you're constantly planning these stories or you're commenting on them all, like, I got a job to do and there's another 50 plus guys that want to go out there and win games. This is already a distraction and we're in a pandemic.
Yeah. Another NFL topic. So Fox Bet came out today and
can't wait for this one. I love that. I'm already excited. I've been waiting the whole time for this.
Okay. So they did, you know, coaching value, and it's all the guys you'd think. Belichick's a field goal, Sean Payton, McVay, and it's all the guys we like. And then all of a sudden you're like, the hell? Mike McCarthy is as good as Sean McVay? Mike McCarthy is ahead of Pete Carroll. And my theory is we were forced 5 years ago to pick a side because Aaron's the GOAT. Everybody kept saying, how come he's not
you, man?
Not you. So you're forced to pick a side. So it's like, okay, Aaron's great. Mike's a meatball. And all of a sudden you're like, Mike leaves, Aaron's numbers don't go up, and Aaron's a little prickly. And is it possible? First of all, is it possible that Mike's a little better than we think and Aaron's not quite as good? I mean, what do you make of where McCarthy falls there? This is what the guys in Vegas who make a living betting, they think he's just about as good as Andy Reid.
No, this is Cowherd 101. You are psyched because you found a little bit of evidence that maybe backs your anti-Rodgers stuff, okay? And then the brilliance of you, which only guys that do it for a living can quite figure. You're asking me the question in a way where I have to kind of agree with you because you're being so soft in the way you're peddling it. We're like, is it possible? Could it remotely? Is there a 1% chance that, you know, and all this stuff. And like, you go, okay, fine. Sure, you got me. And then Colin's like, yep, racket. Actually, you don't say that. Sorry, never mind. But you've been shorting Rodgers, but that'd be like you shorting Kodak in the 80s. You'd be like, okay, 40 years later, yes, the phone trashed these disposable cameras. But in the 80s, it was still the best. Look, I would agree that Rodgers has some holes lately that I did not expect to see. I've given up. Right. I swear, like, the teammate thing is a real thing. You and I have both worked with enough guys that played with Rodgers. You're like, oh, wow. So it isn't the greatest time ever. Okay. All right. Like, I'm now convinced of this. But what I would say is that you've been on this for so long that this guy was the best. He's the best thrower of the football I think I've ever seen up until maybe Mahomes. And yes, there's some declining numbers when you really dig into it that are alarming. But now McCarthy, by a gambling website, is ranked the 8th best. And now that means you were right about Rodgers for a decade. That's a reach.
I just think I like being called out on my show. Between Nick Wright and Russillo, I get dogged about 4 times a week. All right, one more thing.
Baker, please. Were you doing Baker?
Okay, we'll do Baker. I actually think he's going to have a good year. I really do. I think last year he had the worst coach in the league, and I think the offensive line was awful. But here's my one take on Baker, is that you know how it works at big companies. If you're a good guy behind the scenes and you struggle, you'll get one more year. So if Sam Darnold struggles this year, Ryan, they'll fire Gase, they'll keep Darnold.
Yep.
But Baker's had a lot of missteps, and if he struggles, they ain't firing Stefanski. They're moving off Baker. That's my takeaway. Like, okay, they fired the first coach. They fired the second coach. I think Baker's immaturity has put a little pressure on him that he gets no more breaks. Is that fair this year?
I don't know that you can say it's a lot of missteps just in the last year. I just think last year was a disaster. I do think they had the worst coach. They were completely unprepared every single week. I mean, you watched them and you went, what's going on? I also think that Baker started to feel the pressure of knowing that he was under pressure all the time. So I felt like he was making throws that he wouldn't have even made in the first half of the season. And some of this was just based on the expectation of them adding all this talent and having a little bit of a fool's gold finish to 2018. You and I talked about it. We talked about it on the show. We talked about it when we're hanging out. You're like, did you see who they actually beat? And then everybody got really excited about the Browns all of a sudden. So having said all those things, I think the quarterbacks, we're really stupid, I think, when we're talking about active quarterbacks, all of us collectively. Quarterbacks grab us by our shoulders and scream in our faces with years of evidence to be like, this is exactly who I am. Why in year eight are you guys going, well, if Cutler were able to just, you know, a little more tempo from him, like, no, like, this is who he is. Why are we debating this anymore? I would be worried if Baker has a year similar to what he just had, knowing that it sounds ridiculous to run anybody off, especially a number one overall pick. But, you know, by year three, you kind of are who you are. And for Baker, you could argue, hey, that's not even a full three seasons. I'm not as anti him as you are, because I think it was a collective disaster last season. But if it's not more like 2018 and it's more like 2019, like I say with these QBs, like a lot of time they're giving us all the answers to the test. We just refuse to believe the answer sometimes.
That's a really good answer right there. Hey, look at the very nice place you're staying at. Things must be going well for you. Very nice.
It's a rental. This is one of Colin's flips. What are you guys talking about?
Ryan Russillo, great seeing you, buddy.
Thanks, man.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Pro Football Focus is this sort of data grading analytic system. I like it because I'm a football nerd. It's if you like the deep dive on stuff, I'm really into it. And I like predicting stuff and looking at it, and it gives you, you know, it confirms some stuff. I've always been fascinated by quarterbacks. I was a crappy high school quarterback. I love the position. I've gone to these Elite 11 camps. I just like the quarterback position. And increasingly in the NFL, the league really now is about head coach quarterback. If you're good there, you're good. Man, you give me an A quarterback and an A coach, you'll make the playoffs, barring some catastrophic, you know, injury mess. In fact, in the NFC, I predicted all my NFC teams this year. The only one where it's not like a great quarterback is Kirk Cousins. Everybody else, you know, it's a Shanahan, Garoppolo, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll. I got Aaron Rodgers in there. The only one, and I think Mike Zimmer is an A coach, a little conservative, is Kirk Cousins. And I think he's like Derek Carr, super efficient, clearly a franchise quarterback. Pro Football Focus, though, they dive even deeper. They came out with something that's interesting. They ranked the NFL's best quarterbacks on first read throws. Like, that's what comes out of the sideline in the huddle. Coach dials it up. You go to the line, and can you deliver on the coach's play? Top five are Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck, Jared Goff, and Aaron Rodgers. All of them, by the way, had some real nice weapons, right? Had for Andrew Luck, have for the other guys. So this is, you call a play, they go to the line, they may audible into the right prediction, the center does, and all of a sudden, boom, you hit it. Brees, Mahomes, Luck, Goff, Rodgers. Now, before we go to the next one, now, they also, Pro Football Focus, said, what happens when the first throw isn't there? You got to ad-lib a little bit. You got to make a decision. Pass rush now, 3 seconds, 3.5, breaking down. This is where the quarterback has to be special. And I'm not saying Jared Goff and Drew Brees aren't special. They're NFL starting quarterbacks. But it's on those second and third reads where now it's no coaching. Now it's quarterback. Now the route peels off. The protection erodes. Let's go PFF's highest graded quarterbacks on non-first read throws. Oh, wait. Number one, Russell Wilson is miles ahead of everybody else. Mahomes, Breeze, Carson Wentz 4, and Jimmy Garoppolo 5, both higher than Aaron Rodgers. Isn't that funny that the narrative that it's all Shanahan and anybody but Jimmy Garoppolo? No. This proves that it's a marriage, because we know Shanahan's good. But when the play breaks down and you go to a second read and a third read, and the receivers now are ad-libbing, and the protection breaks down, and you got to see the entire field in half a second. Wentz is four, and Garoppolo right next to him at five. Folks, when it comes to quarterbacks, I don't even know why you listen to any other show.
Hear ye, hear ye. For as many years of loyal service to the position of quarterback and his relentless pursuit of the truth, we hereby proclaim Colin Cowherd to be the king of all quarterback opinion.
I mean, it's, well, why are you arguing anymore? I mean, what is the, what's the point of listening to other shows?
You know, Klatt's waiting.
Oh, Klatt,
Your Highness.
Your Highness? Okay, can be sarcastic. With that, I bring in Joel Klatt, who, by the way, 44 quarterback records at Colorado via the Coward Global Satellite Network.
Oh my gosh. I really have to follow that. Like, I'm coming on after you do that.
Okay. Hey, by the way, Ohio State, Alabama.
Yeah.
Now, Nick Saban schedules all the tough games. He'll be gone for almost all of them, but.
100%. 100%.
But what was your takeaway on, we're starting to see, you know, Alabama's going for a couple of years, big dog games. What do you make of it?
I'm excited about it, and I think that this trend hopefully will continue with other programs, and we do see that with other programs, and we've seen it with other conferences over the last couple of years. But these are just those notable home and homes for Alabama that we see. Texas is coming up. That's going to be phenomenal. Wisconsin, Florida State, Ohio State, Notre Dame. These are games that are just good for college football, Colin. And it's, you know what's interesting is I actually think this season and trust me when I tell you this, I have no idea what it's going to look like this season. But this season, part of what the athletic directors are worried about in terms of the coronavirus and how the schedule is going to play out, I think is going to impact future schedules in that I think you're going to see more and more Power Five matchups moving forward because they're just more like-minded. They have like protocols in terms of how they care for their athletes, what the name, image, and likeness is going to mean for those programs moving forward. For this season specifically, what are the protocols as far as testing and safety within those programs? So I love that Alabama and Ohio State scheduled this game. Kudos to Greg Byrne and Gene Smith for getting this done, the respective athletic directors, because this is great for college football. This is what the fans want to see, and I can't. Well, I just hope that Gus and I are still in a booth and get to do that game in the shoe.
All right, now a serious topic. Alfred Williams was a great player at Colorado, maybe the best they've ever had. Great player. And back in 1989.
Buckus Award winner.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was in a great NFL player. So back in the late 80s, he played for Colorado against Oklahoma State. Mike Gundy was the quarterback for Oklahoma State. And Alfred and several Colorado players claimed at the time during the game that Mike Gundy used a slur toward black players. And this week, stories came out about Gundy and racial insensitivity, and the stories came out. Now, Alfred Williams said, listen, I'm not calling for his job. We told you about this years ago, and all I want is an apology and growth, which, by the way, I think that's an incredibly mature take, which is if we want growth, we can't demand perfection for the last 30 years. If the Oklahoma State wants to fire him, they can do whatever they want. Okay, but the apology minimum, but the whole story about Mike Gundy, I said, going forward, let's take it today forward. What does it mean for Gundy and Oklahoma State football?
Well, that's a great question. And it's interesting. I know so many of these parties, you know, that I'm close to them because Colin, I actually worked with Alfred. Obviously, we went to Colorado together. I see him at alumni events. I worked with him at a radio station in Denver. Alfred's a great guy. And all those teammates that he referenced, I know them well from being an alumni. Obviously, covering Coach Gundy, I know him very well. So it's so fascinating. They're also connected. The coach that maybe meant more to Alfred than anybody else in his college career was Bob Simmons, who ended up being the head coach at Oklahoma State basically directly after this season that they were talking about, right in that time frame. So a lot of connections there. Obviously, it was documented at the time. It's been a long time since. But I, like you said, moving forward, it's really clear that Mike Gundy has stepped on his toes, to put it softly, in the last few weeks, right? And admittedly so, he's made some big mistakes. Now, this surfacing, if you want to call it that, or resurfacing, does not help matters. And Colin, I would be completely insensitive if I tried to talk about the human impact of what this is going to mean for Oklahoma State and their football team moving forward, because I don't know. And I can't put myself in those shoes. But what I can talk about and give some level of opinion on is the organizational impact moving forward. So, Colin, I think that this is twofold for the organization or the program at Oklahoma State. First and foremost, I'm a big believer that leadership is everything in every organization, okay? And everything rises and falls based on quality or poor leadership. I'm also a huge believer that a house divided cannot stand, right? It's just impossible. So whatever the cracks are or the fractures are at Oklahoma State due to all of this news in the recent weeks, it remains to be seen whether they can put together a successful season, in particular with one of their star players, one of the best running backs in the country, Chuba Hubbard, being right at the forefront of one of those stories. He's one of the reasons why a lot of us, including myself, thought Oklahoma State would be a nice dark horse pick to win the Big 12, potentially compete for a playoff spot. So that's their impact on the field. And then I think even greater than that is the potential impact in recruiting. Recruiting is the lifeblood to any program. And it's been very apparent both in basketball and in football that these athletes with their social media presence, both in college and in high school, have an enormous amount of power with their decision-making skills, with where they take their talents and how they enter into college and enter into those scholarships. So it remains to be seen what this is going to do to him on the recruiting trail. And rest assured that the other schools that recruit against Oklahoma State will use this to their benefit on the recruiting trail.
So, Taki, you were a quarterback at Colorado, 44 school records as a Buffalo's starting quarterback. Last year, Joe Burrow kind of sneaks up on us. And then Tua gets hurt. This year, we know Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields are the top two. They may go 1 and 2, and both are seen as A-plus prospects. There's no sneaking up. Both would have been drafted top five this year if they were available.
Yeah, potentially.
Is there a third? Give me another guy or two in college football, because those two are done. But if you look at the last 5 years, Joel, and we've talked about this, the quality of high school college quarterback has exploded in the last 7 or 8 years. Okay. Who else behind these two looks like could be the next Josh Allen kind of level player?
Yeah, I'll give you a better one. The next Carson Wentz plays at his alma mater, Trey Lance at North Dakota State. I think he's going to be the third quarterback taken, maybe could challenge for, you know, that second spot. This guy did not throw an interception last year. He rolls out there and runs for 1,000 yards, and I believe it was 14 touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken. He is big, strong arm, runs that offense to perfection. And with Wentz's success in the NFL, he's going to get more eyeballs. The scouts that I talk to say that Trey Lance could absolutely be put right in that category with Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields potentially if he has another big year. And he's going to have a couple of stages. Think about this, Colin. They play Oregon the opening week of the season. That's a big game. North Dakota State could win that game. Yeah. There's no doubt. They are a power, and they would be a really good Division I college football team, even in the Power 5 at this point. And he's going to have that opportunity to shine. So he's the guy that I would point to as the guy that could sneak up on those that maybe haven't heard of him or don't follow North Dakota State moving into next year's draft.
Joel Klatt joining us. You know, the college football season, practices are about to start. I still have a feeling that some of these big out-of-conference games, I'm crossing my fingers on the USC Bama's if they're going to be played, Ohio State, Oregon. Are there a series of games this year? Like Michigan-Washington's interesting. Washington returns most of their defense. Jim Harbaugh has to win these big national games. Are there a handful of games you're really looking forward to early in the season?
Yes. Can I preface this by saying, like, Kansas could play UConn at Jones Junior High School, and I would be excited for it, right?
Right.
I'm like, right? Like, Gus and I will climb two floors of scaffolding and call that game if need be, if that's the only one in town. So I'm excited for anything. But if the schedule does play out as it is currently made up, yes, you touched on a couple of them. Let me just throw out a couple of more. Ole Miss and Mississippi State in the Egg Bowl. And I know that that's not early season, right? But Notre Dame also plays Wisconsin at Lambeau. That's a great one. There are several really, really good games in the non-conference. You touched on Ohio State and Oregon, Michigan and Washington, USC and Alabama. I can't wait for some of that. And this is the product of a lot of that scheduling that went on 5, 6, 7 years ago that brought us some of these home and home type games, and I'm here for it, and I hope that it plays out. Just real quick, Colin, I do think one of the things I'm hearing from athletic directors around the country right now is the one thing that they're nervous about is not these games per se, these major programs against major programs, but the rest of the non-conference schedule, right? So let's say you're going to play UTEP, you know, just for sake of argument, nothing against UTEP, but if they don't have the protocols in place and the testing regimens in place to take care of their players like a Power 5 program would, why would a Power 5 program put their players at risk by putting them on the same field with a program at the you know, level of a UTEP or something along those lines? So what I'm hearing is that you are getting some push from some athletic directors to go conference schedule only.
Yeah.
Only to avoid, Colin, some of those games with lower level division schools that maybe don't have the testing regimens or protocols in place to keep their players as safe as the bigger brands.
By the way, is there, you know, I was just thinking about this morning. Is there a big time program with a coach on the hot seat? And I thought to myself, Clay Helton and Tom Herman. Does Tom Herman, it's interesting, he plays LSU early.
Yep.
And I thought to myself, Orgeron's got a pass.
Oh, yeah.
Does Tom Herman have to win that game for his boosters? Is Tom Herman in trouble if he doesn't get to 10 this year?
He's the one with the experienced quarterback, the expectations. LSU is on borrowed time. They just had maybe the greatest season that we've ever seen, but specifically from Burrow and maybe from a team aspect as well, right? Like, they could kind of flop this year, and yes, there'll be rumblings and people won't be happy, but they just won the national championship and went 15-0, beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They'll be fine, obviously, but Texas, they had expectations going into last year. Remember, it was just 2 years ago that they beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl. Things were sky-high expectations last year. If they, with Sam Ellinger, do not beat LSU, I think that you're going to start hearing some whispers. If there is a coach that is most – I don't want to say in trouble or on the hot seat. I just think most under pressure to win. And maybe this is the case all the time at Texas, but Tom Herman certainly is in that boat, and he knows it. I've talked to him about it. He knows he needs to win. He knows he needs to win some of those big games. I think it starts with that LSU game early in the year.
Yeah, big one. Joel Klatt, absolutely great seeing you. Best to you and the family.